Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today's episode, we are going to be talking about strokes. With the recent death of Luke Perry, the 90210 heartthrob hot guy, oh my gosh, I pined over this guy when I was a teenager, and he's dead now. Wow, of a stroke. I've been getting a lot of questions from patients about stroke prevention and what's the difference between a stroke and a heart attack and if they are at risk. So I decided, you know what, it's probably a good idea to do a podcast all about strokes because, you know, it is a silent killer. It's the number two most preventable cause of death worldwide, and it's the number three killer in the U.S. and number five leading cause of disability in the U.S. So that's kind of crazy. African-American folks and Latino folks are at a higher risk of stroke. Women have more strokes than men, and strokes kill more women than men. Now, granted, women tend to live longer, and three quarters of the strokes that occur at greater, so when someone's older than 65 years of age. And anyone who is 55 or older, the risk of a stroke does double. So makes sense that women living longer will tend to have more strokes. So something to think about there. Now, look a bit more on statistics. According to the Centers for Disease Control, every year more than 795,000 people in the United States have a stroke. And even more shocking, I think, was this one. Someone in the United States has a stroke every 40 seconds. So just thinking about the time frame in which this is common. This happens a lot. So what predisposes you to having a stroke? Well, in terms of stroke risk for women, pregnancy is one of them, preeclampsia or eclampsia. So these are conditions that happen with elevated blood pressure in pregnancy. Gestational diabetes, so having blood sugars that are abnormal while being pregnant. Birth control use and use of postmenopausal synthetic hormone replacement therapy. Notice I'm not saying bioidentical, I'm saying synthetic. So there's a lot of risks for females in terms of strokes. Now, family history of strokes also can be part of the picture here. One of the biggest risk factors, though, for strokes is elevated blood pressure. And unfortunately, with stress, I see a lot of folks with their blood pressure numbers going up and up as they get older. This isn't something to ignore. It's not something to blow off. In fact, what's happening with your body and why elevated blood pressure is an issue for causing stroke is that the higher the blood pressure gets, the more turbulent the blood flow gets within your arteries. And so what's happening is the blood's kind of rushing in your arteries and it's bouncing off the walls of the arteries, causing damage to the walls of the arteries. If there's damage to the walls of the arteries, your body has to make a clot, much like if you cut yourself. And so the body calling platelets over and clogging up those areas of turbulent blood flow that have damaged the arteries can have issues where the clot actually breaks off and can impede blood flow to the brain, to the heart. If it impedes blood flow to the heart, now we have a heart attack. So that is one of the big questions I have been getting lately in my office is, what's the difference between a stroke and a heart attack? It's essentially where a clot lodges. So if someone has a clot and it lodges in the heart, it's going to cause death of the heart tissue. That's a heart attack. If someone has a clot that lodges in an artery that goes to the brain and we have death of brain tissue, that's a stroke. So that's kind of a very simplified difference between the two of them. And the symptoms are different too, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, elevated blood pressure is one risk. Smoking is another, especially if you're smoking and you're on birth control. That's a big deal. If you have diabetes, or even pre-diabetes. These are issues. Why? Because the more sugar that's in the blood and not getting put into the cells to utilize for energy, the more that it's scraping your arterial walls, causing damage again, much like turbulent blood flow with elevated blood pressure. So same with blood sugar. The blood sugar, so glucose being hanging out in the bloodstream, can rip the sides of the arteries, cause more platelets to come over, clog that area, of course, to fix it, but some of those clots break off and get dislodged in certain areas, or get lodged, in certain areas. And like I said before, if it is clogging a blood flow circulation to the heart, it's going to be a heart attack. If it's clogging the blocking the blood flow to the brain, it's going to be a stroke. Now, it's no secret that diets high in trans fat and cholesterol are linked towards causing elevated cholesterol, but also linked to strokes. I think the biggest factor that a lot of people maybe aren't necessarily aware of is that in the US, our labels can have a margin of error by 20%, either above or below what the actual label says in terms of calories, grams of fat, etc. In terms of trans fat, a label can say 0 grams of trans fat, even though it might have 0.2 grams of trans fat in the particular product. Now, usually these are junk foods, and unfortunately, folks aren't going to have just one serving. So if you have, say, 4 servings of a particular item and it has 0.2 grams of trans fat, you do the math, you're almost at 1 gram. It adds up. That's what I'm saying. So the idea here is to really think it through. Oh, if I'm eating something that has trans fat and I'm like, oh, no big deal, I'm not, it's not that much. Yeah, not that much per one serving. How many servings of that item are you having? So what is trans fat? It's the hydrogenated oils. So read your labels. Look for partially hydrogenated, hydrogenated. Those are going to be the issues for you. Now, physical inactivity, we know that walking, moving, dancing, playing, that's going to help us in the long run. Obesity, being overweight, carotid artery disease, so already having issues with plaque buildup in the arteries that supply your heart. So there are, quite a few different precursors here that can set you up, or risk factors that can set you up for stroke. And I'm not done yet. Peripheral artery disease, so this is narrowing of your blood vessels to your arm and leg muscles due to fatty plaque in the arteries. So if you have that, you're setting yourself up for stroke. Alcohol abuse. Guys, 2 drinks a day, fine. Anything over that, considered alcohol abuse. Ladies, 1 drink a day. But if you go over that, now we're, starting to have issues with setting you up for stroke risk and things of that nature. Drug abuse, especially cocaine, amphetamines, and heroin, are associated with increased risk of stroke. Big deal there. And migraines. Now, a lot of folks are aware of this, and in my practice, it seems that migraines have a link to stroke. And if someone has a pretty bad migraine, sometimes I think in the back of the mind, there could be a lot of anxiety going, oh, I think I'm having a stroke. Well, you got to look at the symptoms. And today I'm going to outline the symptoms of what a stroke looks like and how to identify it. So if you do see one happening, you can get this individual help right away. Now, I do think it is important to note that migraines with an aura, so this is seeing a coloration or discoloration around objects when you do have a migraine, is actually associated with a higher risk for ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes in women. And this is especially for those under age 55. So keep in mind, I said before, stroke risk doubles for those over 55, and 3/4 of strokes happen to folks who are over 65. So what is one of the precursors in the younger folks for stroke? It's migraines. So thinking about if you have migraines, how to work to clear them from the body is a big deal. So de-inflaming the body. Because one of the big things that goes along with migraines is that the body will have increased platelets. Like I said before, platelets are there to help to heal damage on the vessel walls. But platelets in general, those guys show up a lot more on blood tests when I'm looking at patients' blood tests when someone is inflamed, meaning eating junk food, stressed out, not taking care of themselves, not drinking enough water. These are all things that can increase the amount of platelets in your system. So if you have migraines, have your doctor check your blood count. So CBC is what it's called, complete blood count. See what your platelet levels are. Another biggie that elevates platelets is allergies. So food sensitivities, but also thinking about environmental mold allergies, things of that nature. So I do highly recommend if you have migraines, it's important to assess your allergy risk and have your doc do a CBC. Look at your complete blood count because it'll get your platelet number in there. And you can see how thick is your blood with those platelets. Do you have a lot of platelets hanging out in the system? A lot of platelets are associated with an inflamed body, also associated with some liver conditions, so things to think about there. Now, the other biggie of things that you can control in terms of risk factors for stroke is sleep. Now, the more rested you are, the better things are going to be no matter what, across the board for your health. But those who have sleep apnea have a higher risk for stroke. So if you've got a partner who's seemingly stopping breathing, so they're snoring so loud, but it seems like they stop breathing or have trouble breathing while sleeping, it's very important to get tested for sleep apnea. The other biggie is if you wake up in the morning with headaches and you're super fatigued, I highly recommend considering a home sleep study. And most insurances will cover that. It's something to consider, especially if you're noticing you're extremely fatigued and you're waking up every single morning tired like that. Now, there are some things that you can't control in terms of your risk factors for strokes. Obviously, you can't control your age, your race, your gender, or your family history in this case, because if someone in your family has had a stroke, you already have an elevated chance of having a stroke yourself, so keep that in mind. Now, if you have atrial fibrillation, this is where blood is pooling in your atria, this is your upper chambers of your heart, it can clot easier and go to the brain, so that's a 5-time risk for stroke, so keep that in mind. Atrial fibrillation is also associated with sleep apnea, so another reason to get a home sleep study. Any type of heart disease, like heart failure, coronary artery disease, dilated cardiomyopathy, congenital heart defects, all put you at higher risk for having a stroke. Sickle cell anemia also does. And the reason being is these folks who have sickle cell anemia have red blood cells that are sickled. They look kind of like a half moon curved shape and they're super sticky and they clog in the arteries quite frequently. It's great for preventing malaria, but does nothing to help with your stroke prevention. So there are 6 types of strokes. So I'm going to list these out for you just to give you a little bit more information. There's a hemorrhagic stroke. This is where we've got a weakened blood vessel and it ruptures and spills into brain tissue. This is more or less the most common type of stroke that goes along with uncontrolled hypertension, so uncontrolled blood pressure. So this is where you really want to make sure that you are working on your blood pressure. Now, there comes a risk with treatment of anticoagulants, so these are blood thinners, that you could cause a hemorrhagic stroke. Now, another precursor to a stroke is a weak spot in your blood vessel wall, an aneurysm. And sadly, aneurysms are quite common. I actually had a really good friend of mine from my gym when I lived in Seattle die of an aneurysm that ruptured just last fall. And it goes quick. She was having migraines. She had a long history of migraines. And it's, you know, one day she was complaining about having a headache at the gym. And then that was on a Friday. And by Sunday, she was gone. It's crazy. It's very quick. So knowing the signs of a stroke, which I'm going to tell you, don't worry, is very, very important because most of us have someone maybe we've known that's had a stroke or something down the line. Most of the time it's an older individual. For me, I have had two people who were pretty close to me, my one friend up in Seattle, and then one of my friends in high school. We were in freshman year of high school, and she was pregnant, so that sucks. But anyway, she ended up having a thrombotic type of stroke. This is a stroke when the blood clot is forming in one of the arteries, and it just went right to the brain. And so it's pretty sad. And yeah, I don't know what to say about that. At 14, it just doesn't seem possible. But yeah, that happened. So, all right, let's talk about other types of strokes in terms of the six options out there that happen. There's ischemic stroke. This is when the arteries to your brain become narrowed or blocked, causing severely reduced blood flow. And this is the type of stroke that my friend had that was 14, because she had a thrombotic stroke. That's a type of ischemic stroke, and embolic strokes are also part of that. So this is kind of serious. Yeah. So another stroke is a silent stroke. There's no signs or symptoms whatsoever. So this is one of the ones you can't really prepare for, but this is one that causes progressive brain damage. Atrial fibrillation poses a high risk for this one. Elevated blood pressure as well. And then we have elevated homocysteine. So anyone out there that's done their 23andMe testing and then ran it through Genetic Genie and noticed that they have something called MTHFR mutations, MTHFR mutations will elevate homocysteine. And so you should have your blood tested for homocysteine levels when your doc looks at your cholesterol, and make sure that you're not bumping that homocysteine up really high to set you at risk for a silent stroke. Okay, fourth type of stroke, the brainstem stroke. This is one where these individuals will have vertigo, dizziness, severe imbalances, and no other major signs of stroke. Maybe a little weakness on one side of the body, but the symptoms don't go along with the typical ones for a stroke. So this vertigo and dizziness, it usually ends up happening together. It's not usually a typical sign of stroke. But a brainstem stroke can cause double vision, it causes slurred speech, decreased level of consciousness. You might think that someone's had too much alcohol in this case. And it's not good. It's not good. So if you notice someone starting with vertigo and dizziness and just comes on really fast, and then they're unable to speak, they got slurred speech, they're going in and out of consciousness, you gotta call 911. You gotta get them some care right away. So the next type of stroke is called a cryptogenic stroke. And really the answer on that one, or the description on that one, is we have no idea what causes that one. A cryptogenic stroke is just a no rhyme or reason for that one. Now the sixth one, and the reason I kind of left this one last in terms of the strokes, is that this one is a very interesting type of stroke. They're called transient ischemic attacks, so TIA. And sometimes they're referred to as mini strokes. And they cause a temporary blockage of blood flow to the brain. These can be a sign that a stroke is coming. It could be that day. It could be 2 years. It doesn't, you know, you don't know. Supposedly, these TIAs do not cause lasting damage, but I don't know. It's almost like the body fights these quickly, and they push the clot downstream and use, you know, our bodies do have natural clot dissolvers. And for some reason, these blockages don't stay in place long enough to cause lasting damage. But we found that TIAs happen before about 15% of all strokes. In fact, the data is showing that about 25% of people who suffer a TIA die within 1 year. About one third of people who have a TIA go on to have more severe stroke, so a more severe stroke within 1 year. And really, the warning signs of a TIA are just the same as a stroke. So, what are the warning signs? sudden numbness or weakness of the face, the arm, or the leg, especially just one side. Sudden confusion, trouble speaking or understanding. Sudden trouble seeing, blurred vision in one or both eyes. Sudden trouble walking, dizziness, loss of balance or coordination. Sudden severe headache with no known cause. So if you think someone is having a stroke, you do want to ask them to do some things. Ask them to smile. Does one side of the face droop? Then see if they can raise their arms. Does one arm drift downward? Is one arm not able to go up or down? Next, ask that person to repeat a simple phrase. So something like, my cat is orange. See if they can repeat that. Is the speech different or slurred, or can they not repeat what you just said? Time. That's the most important thing here. Time is of the essence. Why? Because you really are looking at a matter of minutes to get these folks some care. Because these clots, you don't want them to block circulation enough to cause severe death of brain tissue. Why? Because this is where we have folks being left disabled or dead in some cases. So FAST, face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, time to call 911. FAST, act fast. If you start to see face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, T is time to call 911. Now, interestingly enough, my grandmother had TIAs. I remember my mom talking about them back in the early, you know, mid-90s. She was like, oh yeah, your grandma has TIAs here and there, no big deal. And now I'm, you know, I've been through school and had medical training and I'm like, oh my gosh, back then we just kind of ignored it. And to this day, I have heard people say that they've had TIAs and, you know, no big deal. Well, I do think it's a big deal. In fact, my grandmother had what we suspect was a TIA at our house and fell down our stairs. And that's what ended up getting her in the hospital. And then after that, she ended up passing away within weeks later. I don't remember exactly. I was probably 15 years old or so at the time. Don't remember how much time passed between it, but we do know that she had a TIA right before she fell down the stairs at our house, and then, you know, she was dead a couple weeks later. So these are big deals. Now, granted, my grandma was, I think she was 84 at the time, so a little bit older, but, you know, the point being is just don't ignore these symptoms. And especially if you know someone in your family that they say, oh, you know, grandma's had TIAs, no big deal. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And especially if she does start to show symptoms again of the face drooping, the arm weakness, the speech difficulty, gotta call 911 on that one. Now, because this has been a very big topic in my office since the death of Luke Perry, we got to go back through what's the difference between a heart attack and a stroke. Now, like I said before, a heart attack is a clot blocking blood flow to the heart. And the difference of that between a stroke is we're blocking blood flow to the brain. That's the difference there. Now, granted, with a heart attack, we also can have plaque buildup, so cholesterol plaque buildup that can block the arteries and cause the same thing. It's just the difference of what's blocking the blood flow in that case. Both heart attack and stroke are results of blockage of arterial blood flow to structures. Heart attack being block of blood flow to the heart, stroke being block of blood flow to the brain. That's the main difference if you want to break it down really simply. Now, I could go into way more detail than that, but I'm not going to go there and bore you with that. Now, what are the symptoms of a heart attack? We're looking more on the classical symptoms of chest discomfort or pain, upper body pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, anxiety, lightheadedness, sweating, nausea, vomiting, heart palpitations. That's your typical heart attack signs. Now, women may have different symptoms. Women might have pain in the neck, the back, the shoulders, the jaw. Women might also have complaints of heartburn. Now, males tend to have pain in the left arm. Women sometimes can have pain in the right arm. So there's little subtle differences. Really, between stroke and heart attack, you're thinking in terms of nerve kind of symptoms with the brain, whereas like face drooping, you're not going to see a face drooping in a heart attack. You're not going to see speech difficulty in a heart attack. You might see it in terms of someone being nervous or anxious, but you're not going to see speech difficulty. You'll see shortness of breath. In terms of arm weakness, because the arm might ache with a heart attack, you could see that in a heart attack and see it also in a stroke. So differentiation there is a little bit different. But for sure, you're not going to see a face drooping in a heart attack, and you're not going to have slurred speech in a heart attack. But both of them require a phone call to 911. The next question that I've been getting in my office is, should I give someone who I suspect is having a stroke aspirin, such as has been recommended for someone having a heart attack? We've kind of backed off on that suggestion now because aspirin is a blood thinner, sure, but if we thin someone's blood out really quite a bit and say they're having a hemorrhagic stroke, they could bleed more and bleed out worse, can make the symptoms worse. In terms of a heart attack, it could be helpful, but if that individual has to go in for surgery, now their blood's quite thin. So the recommendation that I'm going to leave you with on this is do not give someone who is having a stroke aspirin. Don't do it. It's not indicated. A heart attack, that's kind of a different story and it's still out for debate. But as of right now, no aspirin to anyone who's having a stroke. Just get them taken care of. Call 911 right away. Now, what does happen when someone's had a stroke and they are getting transported to a hospital? They're gonna get clot-busting medications. And these medications need to be used within 4.5 hours of the time of the onset of symptoms. Typically, for a lot of people, they're gonna have surgeries within about 6 hours of the onset of their symptoms. So this is a big deal. That's why time is of the essence. First moment you notice symptoms, get them taken care of. Why? Because the longer you wait, the more possibility that there's gonna be disability as related to the stroke, more death of brain tissue. So I know a lot of ladies are like, oh, I don't want to bother anybody. It's no big deal. I'm just feeling a little off. It is a big deal. You don't want to be disabled because you didn't make that phone call to get the help that you needed in time. So think about it. Really, really important. Because residual symptoms of a stroke, you could have paralysis. You could have loss of movement. You could have one whole side of your body paralyzed. Now, physical therapy may be able to help get that back for you, but that's what happens the longer one waits. Now, in some cases, there's nothing that can be done. It could be a side effect. So I don't want to mislead folks in terms of the reason someone is disabled from a stroke is because their whoever was with them didn't call 911 fast enough, because I don't want anyone to think that. It's just that the faster you contact help, the better off, or the better chances you have. Let's put it that way. So folks with strokes could have had difficulties talking or swallowing, and so also might have to go to speech therapy, things of that nature. Memory loss, thinking difficulties, concentration issues, emotional issues, pain, numbness. These are all things that are really, really unfortunate side effects of a stroke. So it's really why I want folks to notice the symptoms, get folks help quick, and try to prevent the stroke from even happening in the first place. And of course, being the naturopathic doctor that I am, and this is the podcast where I like to give you options and ways to help prevent strokes, it's time for that now. So, prevention of a stroke. You always want to know where your cholesterol is at. You always want to know where your blood pressure is at. with cholesterol testing, you want to see your level of inflammation. There's something called the C-reactive protein, and it's the cardiac reactive protein that you want to look at to see how inflamed are your arteries. How much of a ticking time bomb are you? You also want to see if your platelets are elevated. You want to look for homocysteine levels. Keep in mind, those of you that have MTHFR mutations, these homocysteine levels might be elevated in you. This is a big deal. Get it checked out. Now, if you are prone to elevated blood pressure with stress, start monitoring your blood pressure. Consider taking a supplement that can help you with managing your elevated blood pressure. I love something called Carditone. It is by a company called Ayush Herbals. It's one of the best things for working with blood pressure. Now, if that drops someone's blood pressure too much, then I recommend Hawthorn Berry. It is one of the ingredients in Carditone, but it is not as strong as Carditone. So something to look at. And these are things you can get online, Amazon, nowhere, you know, it's not a specialty type of supplement. I've even seen Carditone at Super Supplements and other vitamin stores out there. But this is a great way to get that blood pressure in check, because remember, if you have elevated blood pressure, you have turbulent blood flow in your arteries that could be damaging your arterial walls. So get that blood pressure in check. Now, if you have visual changes with stress, this is also something that could be setting you up for a stroke. So if you have kaleidoscope vision, as I call it, where it looks like a kaleidoscope, and when you're really stressed out, this isn't good. Get your vision checked out. Your docs can tell if you have had increased blood pressure that's affecting your arteries of your walls of your eyes. It's really, really cool. And they can tell you, like, oh, you need to work on that big time. So something to think about. Now, if your cholesterol is elevated, you want to deal with that as well, because the more plaque that's building up in your arteries, the more that you're going to have turbulent blood flow too. So Cholestpure 2 by Pure Encapsulations is one of my favorite products. That's a natural version of cholesterol management. It does not have red yeast rice, because red yeast rice is the same as a statin medication. That's what statin medications are derived from. They're going to have their side effects. I also recommend niacin extended release if someone can tolerate niacin. Extended release shouldn't give the flush, but I have seen people have some issues with it. Plant sterols. There's a great one by Orthomolecular Products. Nordic Naturals Pro Omega Fish Oil. One of my other favorite fish oils out there. I think it's hands down one of the best fish oils on the market. And I do think that if anyone has elevated cholesterol, 4 grams a day of fish oil is a wise thing for you to do to help with de-inflaming your arteries. Now, of course, eat clean. Don't eat hydrogenated oils. Like I was talking about, the hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated oils, they have trans fat and the compounds over time. You want to limit your fried foods. You want to eat raw versus roasted nuts. These are probably if you've listened to any of my podcasts, you've heard me say this over and over and over again, but these are things to think about. Coconut oil. The unrefined coconut oil is better than refined coconut oil. What I found across the board, though, for about 50% of my patient population, including myself, using exclusively coconut oil as your oil of choice for cooking can raise your cholesterol levels. It did it to me, it did it to quite a few of my patients. And so I typically will tell folks to limit coconut oil and make sure that if you are doing it, it's unrefined, not refined coconut oil. So those of you out there who are on the keto diet or drinking your bulletproof coffee, watch what you're doing in terms of how much coconut oil you're consuming. Now, blood sugar, berberines. I like berberines big time, 1,500 milligrams a day, along with alpha-lipoic acid at 1,200 milligrams a day. Intermittent fasting, fixing your gut bugs, doing a low-carb or carb cycling type of food plan can help big time. But really, what is the most effective thing for pre-diabetes situations? Really, it's getting your blood sugar in check, but getting it, like, you got to get your stress in check, you've got to work on your digestive system, and you got to start moving. Got to do it. Now, if you're taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy or birth control, I highly recommend switching to bioidentical hormones for ladies who are in perimenopause or menopause that need to replace their hormones, because the risk factors are less. Note, the risk factors are less, especially for stroke. I'm not saying they're eliminated, but they are less. Ladies who are on birth control and have a risk factor for stroke or family history that's pretty significant, you might want to consider not doing an oral birth control. Maybe consider a non-hormonal type of birth control. Now, in terms of ladies who are smoking and on a birth control, oh my goodness, it's like double trouble. You got to stop one. Maybe smoking might be more important. Weight management, of course, movement, like I said before. The more you can move, dance, play, walk, wiggle, I don't care, tap your foot to some music, march, just move some more than you normally do. Fiber. It's a biggie. And fiber one cereal is fake fiber. Let's just put it that way. I'm in support of real fiber. Eating your fruits and veggies a day. 30 to 35 grams a day for folks. Guys, you need more about the 35 grams. Ladies, about 30. And really, 5 cups of veggies a day is a good target. 6 if you already have elevated cholesterol. Sounds nuts, but I'm telling you, the veggies and their fiber really do go a long way. I've seen folks' levels change in their cholesterol, and I've seen folks get healthier with just increasing their veggies, not taking a buttload of supplements, things of that nature. Now, if you have obstructive sleep apnea, you got to get that taken care of. Either start using your CPAP machine or work on other options for yourself. Those who suspect they might have it, so if you have morning headaches, or you have a partner that's told you you are snoring and you possibly are stopping breathing while you're sleeping, this is where you want to get tested for sleep apnea. There are home tests that you can do. I don't think I have to say this. Don't do drugs. They're bad. Cocaine and methamphetamines and heroin are no bueno. Yeah. Enough said. Alcohol. Keep it in check. Headaches. If you have headaches and you have them chronically and they're affecting your vision or you see auras, you got to get that looked at. You want a MRI or CT of your brain, ideally an MRI in this case. Now, if you've never had a headache before and you're having like your first or your worst headache, got to go to the ER. That's my rule with all patients, because I don't know if someone's had migraines for years and years, but they're having their worst one. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they're having an aneurysm. It's going to turn into stroke symptoms, especially if they're telling me they're feeling dizzy. They're telling me that they've got arm weakness. I'm going, okay, you've got a couple of the components here, and especially if they start slurring their speech. So I think it's really important for those of you with migraines to not ignore them, get some help, and make sure you do have a brain MRI. Just know what's going on. Know your risk factors. Really, really important. And if you've had headaches for a while and now they're starting to turn and you've got your first or your worst in terms of folks who have been having it for a while, if you've had your worst headache and it's really just lasting, go get it evaluated at the ER. For those of you who have never had a headache and all of a sudden you get a boom, a huge, horrible headache, just really, really terrible, time to go to the ER. Just be safe. All right, so I've kind of went through all of the components that I wanted to in terms of stroke to get the word out there. Now, there are great resources online where you can even take a quiz. The American Heart Association has a stroke risk quiz, and I've got that link on my podcast notes at drjkrausend.com. I also have all of the information for women about strokes at Go Red for Women. So this is a organization that talks all about heart disease and in particular strokes, because I do think that women tend to pass off strokes as being no big deal. They're just not feeling good that day, or I don't know what it is, but it seems that in the cases that I've seen and in a lot of literature online, that women tend to blow off strokes. So ladies, don't blow stuff. Now, I also put a resource here that shows how a stroke progresses and how it is created. So the stroke mechanism from the Dana organization is up there as well. And
my stroke prevention guidelines, what I rattled through in terms of all the different things that you need to do to keep yourself from having a stroke, I'm going to have them on my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. So that has been my public service announcement on stroke prevention. And I hope that this has been a great refresher for those of you out there that maybe have seen the bulletin boards, the billboards, maybe that's a better word, the billboards that are out there that talk about the FAST, meaning the face drooping, arm weakness, S in terms of slurred speech, and T in terms of time. Gotta call 911, get folks care, FAST. So keep that acronym in mind. And if you see someone having those symptoms, don't even think about it twice. Don't even hesitate, call 911. And of course, if anyone's having chest pain, dizziness, those types of symptoms, nausea, vomiting, you're looking at a heart attack, call 911 for that too. But I think it's just the more folks that you can relay this information to and have listened to either this podcast or talk to your friends, your family, your children, have the conversation about what a stroke looks like. Pass the word on, because I think a couple years ago we were really good about talking about this, and then it kind of fell off as not being a big deal anymore. And it is. You could save lives. So FAST, face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, time to call 911. All right, folks, you have survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krauss. Go out, have a great day, whatever you're doing. Hey everybody, Dr. Janine Krauss here. If you liked what you heard today, then head over to drjkrausnd.com to find my free resources and information to know when I post something new that's juicy that you might want to check out. Plus, head over to where you get your podcasts and like, subscribe, and write a review to help get the word out about me and help others at the same time to find me. It really does help, and I really appreciate all of your reviews.